Imagine yourself under a starry sky, around the warm glow of the sacred fire, as your hosts, Seren Odinson, Jim Two Snakes, and Caitlin Stormbreaker, talk about shamanism, animism, books, science, psychology, pop culture, and more. Welcome to a show inspired by those late-night conversations by real-life spiritual practitioners. Won't you come and join us around Grandfather Fire?
To blood and bone we sing in stone, in dirt and tree and root. We pray to know in flame and snow the breath of all our birth. We seek your words in food and mirth and story and in myth. The ways that you, O ancestors, lived in love and frith. We seek you high, we seek you low, in earth and sky and life. We seek you in the utter dark and seek you in the light. We seek you from the void's old home, from ice and flame combined. From the tree, breath and body, our bloodlines are defined. So come to us, O sacred ones, dance and sing and speak. So long we've been without your voice, so long we have been weak. Come fill us with your blessings, come fill us with your songs. And when we die, accept us in to join the yodel throng. Welcome me, O ancestors, holy ones new and old. And through your guidance, O your grace, your gifts, let the paths of weird unfold.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Around Grandfather Fire. You're listening to the big episode number 50. Yay! I know, I believe it or not. I am Jim Two Snakes, joined as always by my good friends and co-hosts, Seren Odinson and Caitlin Stormbreaker. How are you both doing tonight?
Surviving.
Right? Right? That is the catch word for 2020, I think. Right
there. Yeah. I don't know if it's actually been helping or not, but there was a part one to a game that I played a few years ago called The Last of Us. And the reason why I started playing it is because I love the voice actress who plays the main character. And The Last of Us Part 2 just came out like a couple of weeks ago, I think, and there has been so much controversy over the release of this game and the storyline and all that, but I have just been binge watching other people play it because trying to play the first one was so anxiety inducing and terrifying that I was like, there's no way I could play the second one, especially right now in this like really anxious part of the world that's going on. Like maybe a few years from now I might pick it up and give it a try, but like even just watching this guy on YouTube run through it, I was like, I had to pause and give myself a few minutes just to survive the video because I was like, what is going on? So I forced me to kind of dig into that too, but chaos, man, chaos.
You got to watch more positive stuff. I think like The Wiggles are on Netflix or something. You got to.
Well, I might binge watch the Avatar again because that's always
so good. Yeah,
Uncle Iroh. He's my buddy.
That's right. How about you, Seren? How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I slept pretty well. And that Ancestor song has me all jazzed. So the Ancestors are very.
I know. It woke me right up. How about that? Oof. Better than a Red Bull.
Wow, that's saying something.
Yeah, about that. Well, before we go too much further, I want to go ahead and introduce our guest tonight because we're really excited to have this person on. The author of some really amazing books, Cleansing Rites of the Currentissimo, Currentissimo Soul Retrieval, and an upcoming book, Sacred Energies of the Sun and Moon. And we would like to welcome Erica Buenaflor. How are you doing tonight?
Fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. I know all three of us were tearing through your books in the last week and taking copious notes, and it was, I don't know, it was really good stuff. I appreciate what you're sharing with everybody.
Thank you.
The thing I love the most, because I was only able to read one, but it was the Cleansing Rites book that I was managed to get through. The amount of research that you have done is so impressive and so unheard of, really. You know, a lot of our teachings come from being passed down and we just kind of write from memory and pull from other random sources. But I mean, you went really far back in your research. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really nice. And Caitlin and I come from, we were taught Peruvian traditions. And what was really amazing to me, because I really focused on the soul retrieval book, was a lot of the cosmology similarities. You know, just the way the directions are conceived and the parts of the soul and the energy centers within the body and a lot of that stuff. I'm like, oh yeah, yep. Oh sure, yep. Sounds about right to me. So it was really, it was a nice validation that all along South and Central America that we're getting such similarity in what the spirits have taught.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
I love it. So how did you get started with all everything that you're doing? It seems like you have multiple irons in the fire, but how did all this get started for you?
This is something that has been passed down. I mean, it was something, honestly, I started doing my first Nipia when I was about 5 years old. I mean, it's something that is, it's part of a family tradition, you know, culturally. And my great-great-grandmother, she was a very well-known curandera. And we had a lot of stories in the family about, you know, how she would heal. And she was also owner. She owned her own bar. You know, she had a saloon during the Mexican Revolution. Oh, you know, so awesome. She was this little petite gregarious woman with, like, patch over her eye.
Wow. This is a woman after my own heart.
Right? This is a story all by itself.
Yeah. And, you know, it was just, I grew up with those. I grew up with that, and I grew up at a time where there was a huge shift. It has, like, Mexico has experienced a huge, it already been like experienced a huge shift, you know, because like the Industrial Revolution was coming in a modernization kind of way. So it was like my grandmother went to nursing school instead of practicing, you know, the our traditions, but like incorporating what we did. It was a shift. It was a huge shift. So it was something that I was, it was in my heart and was definitely in me, in me. And then when I got to school, I had some really cool Chicanic studies professors who just really cracked me open. You know, how cool are, and I was like, oh my goodness. Because when I came to the US, it was at a time where you didn't speak Spanish and being Mexican was not a good thing. You know, so it was like, I was very like shut down with my culture. You know, I didn't want to be connected to my culture, to my indigenous culture. And then when I got to school, it was like, oh my God, my culture's amazing. I love it. And it was a very much, I mean, honestly, it's been a very healing process for me. It's been my own soul retrieval process of studying this. So it's not just like me being it's not just because I'm a nerd. Because I am, but you know, it's not just that aspect, but it's me like very much doing the healing work for myself when I'm researching. And what happened was when I got to UCLA, it was during the time of the hunger strike. And you know, it was like 3 years after that, but there were still a lot of walkouts. And the hunger strike, we were basically trying to get our own Chicanic studies department, because we wanted to be able to study our history, our culture, and have a degree with it. And they weren't having it. So, you know, it got very much involved in social justice issues. So I decided, you know, to go to law school and do social justice and change the world, becoming an attorney. And the second year in law school, the universe had something very much different for me. I went down to Yucatan. Yeah. It's like, yeah, no, that's not going to, you know, we have something else planned for you. And I met my first two mentors. And I just, it just like something clicked in me right away. After my first, my own limpia, I just like, oh my goodness. And I actually went back there 4 months later. And I remember one of my mentors asked me, he's like, oh, you know, so what are you going to do with your life? And I told him I'm going to be an attorney. He laughed at me and he's like, you're not going to like it. And I'm like, here's this little indigenous man like telling me like, I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, you're like your great grandmother, you're a great, great grandmother, you're a curandera. You know, you need to practice your tradition. And at first I was like, nah, I don't know about that. And, but 7 years passed and I kept going there to study. And then when I was in the States, I was continuously studying, you know, a lot of different things here. And then in 2005, I fell. I was hiking. I didn't ground myself after very deep meditation. I woke up with a skull fracture, brain hemorrhage, left AC dislocated, 2 vertebrae in my back fractured. I completely shattered my coccyx. Left leg, I fractured in 3 places. Right leg, knee down, all of my bone shattered came out of my heel. They told me I was going to be in pain the rest of my life because my coccyx was shattered. They couldn't do anything about that. I lost half the bones in my right ankle because I got severe osteomyelitis as well. Because when they put the bones back in my heel, they didn't do culture. So it ate away at my bones. So they're like, if you do walk again, there was still a question. It's like, you're going to need some kind of assistance. So I was in a wheelchair for almost a year. I was. And during that time, I applied everything that I had learned, you know, in the curanderismo tradition. You know, I applied solbaderismo, which is a form of shamanic acupressure point. I worked with herbs. I worked with so many different things that I learned in trance journeys and all these different things. And long story short, after not walking for almost a year, I walked with a completely normal gait in less than 2 weeks and remained 100% pain-free. And after that, I just, you know, I think, you know, honestly, it was like funny, like looking back at during that time, I think the only time I ever really cried when I was thinking about having to go back to work as an attorney. I was like, I don't want to go back. Cause it was very much, it was like my own healing process of like saying to myself, it was okay for me to do something that was in my heart. That I didn't have to be a professional. I didn't have to, you know, cause it was like, that was expected of me. That was very much expected. My mom was the first one to go to college. My dad was the first person to go to college in our family. So yeah, you better believe I was supposed to go and be a professional. Mm-hmm. So it was something like, it was something that I had to be like, I had to really just let go of and shift out of. And then I said, well, you know, I'll go back to grad school and kind of figure things out. And that's when I really just plugged myself into all the codices. And I really went really deep. I went deep, deep, deep in my own healing work. I continued my mentorship. And during that time, I was seeing clients. So I was doing these traditions. I was like wearing different hats. And I got to a point where finally I was just like, I'm going to be me. I like being me. And I had done enough work on myself where I was like, okay, it's time for me to come out of the closet fully. Mm-hmm. You know, and take back me, take back my culture and identified myself as a curandera because it took me a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, it took a long time for me to go through that. And yeah, so it was a process. And that's pretty common for a lot of people. But yeah, I definitely look back. It was definitely a process for me.
Sounds like it. I mean,
yeah,
breaking that many bones, I think, was probably the turning point in your life where it was like the universe was like, oh, really? You think you're going this way, but we're going to do this and make you go this way.
Yeah. Yeah. I was stubborn.
I'm just picturing even that elder with that look on their face, like, you're going to hate it. Because I had a discussion with somebody just yesterday and they said, it's so aggravating when you're a younger practitioner and one of the elders looks at you as just that shit-eating green and says, oh, that's what she thinks is going to happen. You know, it's just like, oh, I've been there. I know it. It's infuriating, but.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really satisfying when you give your students that look. When you're no longer on the receiving end. Poor Matt.
Let me know when that happens. I'm not sure when I've ever stopped being on the receiving end of that. But now it's just spirit giving it to me directly.
I mean, holy shit, what an initiation. You got dropped off a damn mountain. Also, this is why we ground the center, folks. just incidentally, by the way.
Yes.
Oh my gods. I mean, how much were you not paying attention?
Well, you know what happened was, is that I had a time slip, literally. Because I went to Sacred Chumash land, you know, Native American land, and I was guided to to activate a spin cycle there, to work with the earth, and to help cleanse it. And I thought maybe 15 minutes went by, hours went by, and I had to leave that day on a plane. And I looked at the time, and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to miss my flight. And I did, fell off a cliff.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah. The
kind of manifestation people are usually looking for, but it worked.
Right.
Oh my, that's amazing though. What a wonderful journey though, learning how to incorporate all these different things, because that's how it came across in this book, is that you had several different influences and that you have managed to meld those together. What would you say your path looks like right now?
You know, I feel that, the plants will always be my teachers. You know, I just got done making a bunch of tinctures, and I'm always working with plants. I feel like they're always my teachers. I'm always, you know, their mentee. I'm very excited about teaching, like sharing what I've learned, writing about it. And I'm always researching still too. You know, I'm still going back, and because a lot of it, it's very different. You know, a lot of this information, some of it isn't academic, but I feel like it needs to be translated.
Yep.
Yeah, I definitely feel you there. Like, the amount of times where I've like wanted to shake an academic, like, no, like, this is wrong. Congratulations, you translated the word, but you did not get the spirit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like it. Some of them do really wonderful, and those are the ones that I draw on. But I still feel like some of it's like, okay, well, what does this mean for us now? Mm-hmm. How can we use this wisdom now?
Yep.
You know, because it's not something that is just in a book or just in artwork or just, you know, it's something, how can we use it now? Mm-hmm. You know, in our modern day world. And that's a big thing that I do, that I go back and I research and I look at codices. I look at so many different things. I look at the ethnographies. I'm constantly doing that. So that's like a big chunk of my day.
I think that's kind of an interesting topic to talk about then. Because like you said, you've gone back to codices that have dated back to like the 1700s and maybe even further.
Oh, yeah.
How, like, understanding the rites and the rituals and all the information that you get from those times, how do they translate into our world now? Like, where are they different? Where are they the same? You know, how did you bridge that gap? How did you come to bring it into this more modern world?
Well, you know, it's what I did with, for example, like, and I'll just go off like what I did in the different books. What I did in Cleansing Rites of Curanderismo is I looked at what are the most fundamental types of limpias, cleanses that we do. You know, one of them being that was still very much like practiced back then, or what they did was pláticas, which are heart straightening talks. You know, and it's something that I know I felt, because when, like, you know, when you have a friend or a family member that just tells you really heavy stuff and afterwards you're just like, eh, you know, like, I need a cleanse, mm-hmm. You know, because energy gets released. You know, we talk about things like that. So, you know, and how they honored pláticas, how they honored these talks as being a sacred ritual and a form of, it wasn't just like a type of confession. You know, they called in, you know, the deities, they called in, and that in and of itself was, okay, well, that was part of a sacred ceremony, you know, and it wasn't like you're bad, you're going to go to, you have to say these, you know, it was very much a sacred ritual and honoring and recognizing everyone did that too back before they died. So I looked at this and looked at, okay, well, how is this relevant to us today? You know, so what are some of the things that we need to do? And I, you know, I name off some like basic things. And it's like, one of the things is you need to have like some kind of cleansing going on. Like I use copal or something that cleanses the space as the person is talking. After you do the space, you cleanse it. You know, it's a way that allows the heart to release. And another one was fire. you know, that was still very common, you know, that they actually act, they use fire. They still do it to this day. A lot of the Mesoamerican people, they still do it, especially the Maya, you know, because the Maya have really held on to their traditions. They do it to activate what they call the sacred essence energy of a living space or an altar or a sacred instrument where they replenish it, you know, like with a certain cycle with fire, like different kinds of fires, fire ceremonies that they do. And there's, I'm just like giving like basics. There's a lot more too that I have in the book, but then there's water, you know, where they do water rites where that was something that they did when a baby was born. You know, that they cleanse the, they balance the karma, they cleanse, they honored and they cleanse the baby of all their parents' iniquities, like everything, you know, just a very different understanding of how we look at water and how it cleanses us. Also sacred spaces, you know, how to activate sacred spaces with certain energy signatures, how to cleanse them. So, I mean, we all still need that. All of us still need that. You know, when people come to me, and this is something that's still like when people come to me and they're experiencing insomnia, I ask them, when was the last time you cleansed the energy space of your room? And they look at me like very perplexed. Like, why is this lady asking me this? You know, what does this have anything to do with anything? And I tell them, I said, go home, cleanse your space, your bedroom. You know, cleanse it every day for 7 days. And the next thing you know, like when they're cleansing, because that energy gets stuck there in our living spaces. Because it also, our living spaces also have a spirit essence energy. You know, that's something that's still believed in, that's ancient, that's still common to this day. And we start understanding that whether you believe that it has a spirit essence energy, we bring in energy to our spaces. So it's like clearing it out and like recycling it. And it's also understanding that if we take care of our living space and cleanse it, it will take care of us too. So those are things that are still very much relatable to this day. Mm-hmm. Very much relatable. And how they're different is that, you know, they're experiencing different kinds of things in terms of like jobs, like people doing different kinds of jobs for different reasons. Thinking that they have to do X, Y, and Z because they have to get that new Lexus or they have to get that new, you know, but yet they're miserable in their jobs or, you know, it's different. Mm-hmm. It's different. I mean, they have some similarities, I'm sure, but there's different. But the basic fundamental tools can still be used for anything. You know,
I'll be honest. When I looked at the Platicus, I about laughed out loud because the imbalance you've talked about is something that I have, before COVID hit and I was shopping a lot on my own, it was something I'd experienced because I would shop, you know, in the dead of night at like 2 or 3 in the morning and some random person would come up and their life story would come spilling out of their mouth. I call it having the sign on. And yeah, the fact that our communities don't provide this space is, it's going to come out somewhere. And by God, when you get some spirit worker walking around just trying to buy a gallon of milk and some bread at 3 in the morning, all of a sudden some random guy comes up and has to tell you their whole life. It's not that I find it frustrating or annoying. I find it actually really powerful and beautiful, but it really speaks to how the overculture of America just does not have a place for this cleansing needed work.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because when they would experience plagues, like the one that we're experiencing right now, the COVID-19, they actually went outside and they would, all the shamans would come around and start doing cleansing and people would actually speak out loud what their transgressions were, because they were believing that would shift the energy if everyone was releasing, you know, it was believed that was very common, that would help to clear things out of the way mm-hmm. and shift energy.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where a lot of people, I think, get into, especially from a more academic standpoint, they get into that kind of confusion because they think that the confessions, oh, you're driving away evil spirits. And they think that, I think there's a conception there that some of this was literally caused by evil spirits. When I think a lot of times the cleansing, that what it was trying to do is acknowledge that we need to shift this energy so the natural world can kind of come back in order.
Well, that has a lot to do with the missionaries. They were incredibly racist, racist and everything else. No bueno under the sun. Well, I mean, you know, yeah.
Actually, it does bring up a question I'd like to ask you, because it seems like you would have a really good insight into this. So you did have the benefit of having some mentors, but when you're trying to get information out of some of these older codexes and resources, how do you trust what you're learning in a way to translate it to modern times? If you don't have somebody that can directly say, yep, that was the right way, how do you learn to trust that?
Well, you know, it came to me when among my most recent book, which is going to be coming out in 2021 on animal medicine, that the Inner Traditions hasn't told me what the formal title is going to be, but there's a chapter that I have on shapeshifting, because that is very common understanding. And there were very different types of shapeshifting. It wasn't just physical shapeshifting. You know, there was bilocation where, and this is documented in there's various missionaries that talk about this, that they would find the person have exactly the same injuries that the animal would have when they shot the animal, or when they, whatever it is, whatever that they did, the person would have it. It was bilocation. You know, and there's different kinds, there's astral. So it was one of those things of I try my best to make sure that I'm also understanding the hieroglyphs. I'm doing the academic route too, like understanding, and I'm still educating myself. I'm still doing everything I can. Then I also use my intuition. And I say, okay, well, this looks like this, but I think there's more than this going on. Because sometimes when a lot of it, what happened was that they made this dichotomy of like, oh, well, the people that were shapeshifting, they were bad. They were doing things that they were the ones that were not doing. And then I said, actually, that's not true, because Jacinto de Serna, one of the missionaries, this is in 17th century, he notes that there was a curandero who could shapeshift into a white dog. And it was, you know, he tells about this lady who, she had asked this curandero to heal her husband, and a white dog comes out, and then she starts beating the white dog with the pole, and then the curandero comes back and said, like, why'd you hit me? Why'd you beat me? I'm trying to help you, you know? You know, so I'm like, no, it's, you know, it's up to us not to try to like easily like put everything into a box, you know, and simplify things. Like, we have to be able to, you know, of course, we do our due diligence, we study things, but we have to be able to do things intuitively. And I always say that this is what I've been finding thus far. And as we learn, as we grow, it's going to change. It may change, it may not, but this is what we can know. And it's not that information can be lost or is lost, you know, because that's also another thing that people say, like, oh, well, now it's lost, you can't get to it, it's just too complicated. Absolutely not.
Like, I identify so much with what you've written, and it's from a Mesoamerican perspective, but there's so much where I'm like nodding along going, yep, we have that in heathenry. Oh my gods. Like the shape-shifting bit. Like, yes, we have, where if you injured the animal the person was riding along in, it would show up on the person who was sleeping. There's ethnographic accounts of the Sami people, which were pretty close to the old ancient Norse people, where they'd go and do stuff like that. And it turns out that there's echoes of it in the Norse literature.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like all of this stuff that I'm sitting here reading, like the Olympias, I'm like, oh, so they did that with torch cleansings or with fire cleansings. Like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. They blessed the baby with water, and the child wasn't a member of the tribe or considered human until you named them. So like the breath being an imparter of spirit. Like, I'm like, ding, 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 ding. All this stuff's lining up. It was a real joy to read, because like I'm sitting here reading this like, yeah, we're not one-to-one, but by gods, we have a ton that we share, far more than what's different.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I really enjoyed reading about the pláticas, because it's like the way I understood it was basically the curandero or the shaman would create the sacred space for that person, for them to release and transform that energy that they felt was like weighing them down or causing them bad luck or whatever. And the shaman would take that and like just dispense of it, just cleanse that energy. And then that person, like, I could be misremembering, but I think they gave them like homework to do.
Yeah.
Like, you have to go home and do this, this, and this for this X amount of days, and it'll make this thing go away. And I loved that part because, like, I've been considering kind of taking on students to begin with because I'm only 10 years into my practice. You know, I'm still a baby, quote unquote. But that is one of the things that I was thinking about doing is like, okay, I'm going to do a heavy cleansing on you and I'm going to take all this heavy energy, but you're also going to have homework to do when you leave my house because you have to ingrain this within yourself. Like, I'm just facilitating the removal of the energy to give you space to bring the change is how I kind of understood how Platicus worked.
Yes.
And that's awesome.
Yes. 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 It's a paradigm shift. It's a paradigm shift because a lot what, especially in Christianity, was like, you know, the priest or the person, like they were the healers. They were the ones who facilitated the healing. And it's like, no, we facilitate opening the door for you. You have to do the work. We facilitate to open up a pathway for you guys so you can do the work, but you have to do the work.
Yep. Hey, look, folks, you heard it from somebody that wasn't us.
It wasn't the three of us.
You have to do the work.
And the work will teach you how to do it.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeehaw, Estonian proverbs.
So can you, I know you said it quite, the word quite a few times, but Limpias, can you explain to our listeners what those are? Because the three of us have read about them and probably know them rather intimately at this point, but our listeners are probably going, oh, what is that? What does that word mean?
So, you know, Olympia, it's multi-layered in purpose, right? And meaning. So I'll give an example of one kind of Olympia too. I didn't mention too that the bariras, the sweeps. So one is that's still very common, that is still very used very much in curanderismo traditions, are egg limpias. You know, where we use an egg, you know, that we either put it in water that has been like blessed or charged or, you know, whatever. It's water that is, or it's a fresh egg, a fresh hen egg. But most of us don't get access to fresh hen eggs. So we put it in water and then afterwards, you know, we use our dominant hand to cleanse the person. And then after we've done that, and there's various ways of doing it, and I explain some of them in the book, you know, we outline that the person to do it, you know, whoever we're doing it, and then we crack the egg in a glass of water, and then we read the egg. So the egg, it's a cleanse, you know, it gets rid of, and you can, it's a cleanse, so the person will feel like just really well, and then afterwards you can read the egg, so it's also divination too. Like what was going on? So you're saying like, look, this needs to happen. You know, you can read it. You can see like if the person has been attracting energies that just don't serve them. I've had like, you know, I've had eggs like actually turn into different forms, like make different shapes for based on what the person is telling me, which is just amazing. I'm like, look at this. They're like, huh, you know? So it's a cleansing, and the same thing with the fire. Like when we do a candle afterwards, you read the candle. You know, after the fire, like while it's burning, you're reading it too. So it's a cleanse. It's also a way to manifest. And it's also a way to do divination work too. So it's very multi-layered in purpose and meaning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that about the Limpia, just because it's multi-purposed, but it's also practical. You know, you use everyday items and it's not things that you have to order out or go to, you know, that special store down on the side street. All you have to do is go knock on your neighbor's door and be like, do you happen to have a fresh chicken egg?
Yeah. Lemons. You can use lemons. You can use herbs. You can use flowers. You can use a lot of different things that are very common. And that's going back to the curanderismo way because they went, you know, what was accessible to them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something that really kind of stuck with me through reading both the books was that your use of the word shaman and shamanism wasn't as appropriative. It was as a handle to carry other words that we don't have words for yet.
Exactly.
And I really appreciate that you went into that and were like really bald faced about it, because it's something that all of us here on the show have talked about at great length. And I love it. You're like, yes, I know this word's origins and history, but it's a handle. And it, that's, you know, I really appreciated that you just tackled that straight on. And you really went into the roots of Gran Turismo, and I hope I'm not butchering it, but my pronunciations are probably garbage.
I know mine are garbage.
So. I really appreciate how you went into the history of things and where your different mentors kind of came out of. And I found it really cool that, you know, I could look at different works and go, oh, I recognize that. Like the Sobaderos work reminds me a lot of the powwow doctoring, laying on of hands and emotional release therapy touch. Tonali, I probably butchered the hell out of that.
Looks perfect.
Okay, so like the fact that you went into the soul parts in both books was really cool to me. Like, I dig that hardcore, because Ethan Rhee has between 5 to 17 soul parts depending on who you talk to.
Right.
And it was just, oh, this is so awesome. This lines up with this. This lines up. Then a lot of the book, I was just going, wow, this is where we have crossed, you know, serious. And it almost look like it doesn't look necessarily the same, but it echoes each other so much. I'm like, oh, this ain't coincidence. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's even in the, if you go, FAMSI.org, which is, it's a website where you can go and look at a lot of the artwork. And it's all, you know, you can just download it for free. You can look at it. They have all the codices. They have the vases, the Maya vases. You can access so much information there. And it's so super cool because, you know, when the soul pieces, like, for example, when they're bringing in and they're bringing in, they're doing ceremony and they're breathing in sacred essence energy, there's also times where they're also breathing in and they're acknowledging ancestral sacred essence energy coming into them. And they have their names, recognizing that they're actually becoming, that soul piece is actually going into them. You know, whether you want to call it reincarnated or soul pieces coming into them or they're becoming them. There's all these, it's just like so friggin' awesome.
I like that there's not a huge hang up on verbiage, because like I'm a guy who really likes like things neat and tidy, and I like categories, but I also have to recognize that even in the soul parts, there's a lot of bleed over between different soul pieces.
Yeah.
Like the soul matrix bleeds into each other because like, oh, these are aligned with the physical body, and the physical body is its own soul part. So if there's something going on there, it affects these. I love the interconnectedness of this work. So like reading how the lymphias affect the energy body even, and what it kind of puts into the energy body when you do the lymphia, was really cool to see. So like, you know, the fire putting in its essence echoes not just, oh, this is fire cleansing you, but it's also putting something in. And you have to recognize which practice is going to be useful for what they're going through or what needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, loud motorcycle, I think Erica mentioned it earlier, and actually it's something that I hear reflected a lot in with Native Americans and elders around the world, is that the statement that this is my understanding right now. Like there is no, we can't go to the patent office and say, well, this is the diagram of soul parts and you can see by the number that this is the correct patent, and that, you know, no, it doesn't work that way. You know, we always constantly shifting our understandings as we experience new things.
Yeah, let me go get that soul user manual over there on the desk, right, and leaf exactly through it and find the right.
Yeah, this, and I think that's a perfect way of expressing it, is that you can only know what you know right now. It's all right.
Mm-hmm. So Cabra on our Discord channel asked, and this is kind of a cool segue, I guess, but they were wondering, is soul retrieval a regular maintenance, or is it a medicine for a rare occasion? Do you do soul retrievals for everybody, or is it just in the most extreme cases that you do that work, all or help facilitate above that work?
All of the above. You know, the understanding of if, you know, most of us have had some kind of trauma on very level in various ways. And if, for whatever reason, we haven't honored that piece of us, those soul pieces are naturally are supposed to come back on their own. But there's something that if they haven't come back, it's because we haven't honored that. We're not doing something that has them coming into us for medicine from us. Instead, they're in some non-ordinary realm getting medicine for themselves, you know, seeking shelter, seeking whatever it is. So it's one of those processes. It's like healing. Like healing is a process. We're an onion that's constantly being, you know, peeled away. And even how I approach soul retrieval, it's a little bit of a different shift. When I first learned soul retrieval back in, goodness gracious, was that long ago? I want to say 2002. It's like, oh my God. yeah.
It's okay. It's only 10 years ago.
Right. when I first learned and I was seeing clients, you know, I was working as an attorney. I was seeing clients. I had this one teacher who was, she was actually retired. She taught meditation. She actually came to me, you know, she was a matriarch of her community. She actually came to me for a session and I was just really honored. I was like, oh yes, of course. You know? So when we went and we did a journey, one of the things that I saw was that her daughter had been molested. Mm-hmm. And this is not something she had shared with me. And after the journey work, I looked at her and I didn't know how to approach this. You know, I didn't know what really to say, how to bring that up, but I just did. You know, I said, well, this is, you know, I don't know if it's metaphorical of what I saw, if it was literal. And then she started just crying. And I'm like, okay, what I saw was literal. So, you know, during the journey, I did what I was taught to do, was to bring back that soul piece, you know, right away. It's like, that's what you do. And then you work with them to help integrate that soul piece. And, you know, it was beautiful. And then afterwards, she just thanked me. She hugged me. She just was beautiful. And then afterwards I was cut off. I was no longer welcome to the meditations. I was no longer welcome to anything. And I remember going to one of my mentors, like in tears, you know, telling her like, oh my goodness, this is what happened. And I remember her telling me, this is a while back, you know, she told me, she's like, she just laughed. She's like, you know, you Westerners, you just want everything easy. Give you a pill, make it go away. Pop, 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 make it go away. You know, it's like, that's not how it works. You know, you have to make sure that you create a space for that soul piece to come back so it stays. Because if the person isn't doing something to honor that, to honor whatever it is that hasn't allowed that piece to come back, it will leave again. Mm-hmm. It will leave again. What you do is you create the connections. You show them how to help heal those pieces and how to create those spaces. So a lot of what I do, you know, yeah, I do the journey work. I see certain things, but they also have to do the work. They also have to, like, okay, you know, for the self, what do they have to discover and understand about what they're not doing in terms of honoring themselves? The West, what is it that they need to release? What is it they need to let go of? You know, what are those shadow aspects that they need to let go of? The North, because a lot of us are so unconnected with ancestors for whatever reason. Maybe we just don't feel like we have any history to it. We don't have anything, but we all have a connection. It's just a matter of allowing ourselves to intuitively go into why is it that we feel connected to a vocation or a land or a culture or tradition. It's typically ancestral in nature. You know, it's like opening ourselves to some kind of divine wisdom and guidance. And then the East being open for new beginnings. And all those spaces, when we go to that, and I teach people how to work with those spaces, they give sacred essence energy. So I help the person make that connection, but they ultimately have to do the work. You know, it's not one of those things like, I am the healer. I'm going to make everything go away for you. And it's magical. Poof. You know, it's just, no, absolutely not. That's ridiculous. You know, and if that's just like, that's not the way we are going to shift. That is not the way how we are going to grow. It's like, I'm going to show you, I'm going to definitely make the connections for you. And there are going to be synchronicities that happen. So if it was a child that needs, that inner child needs healing, there's going to be something that happens where you get invited to a paint night because you need to play more. You're just going to be synchronicities that happen that give you that space to play, and you need to acknowledge that and reflect on that. But ultimately, the person needs to acknowledge it. So it's something that I provide the fundamental tools in the book and maybe in a session, but the person still has to do the work. You know, because yeah, I could do that where I just poof, I make the connection, the soul connection right away. But the person, if the person's not living their truth, doing something that they haven't acknowledged, that peace will not come back. And you know, sometimes it's small. Like for example, I remember last year I had a small piece come back to me, myself. I remember when I was in junior high and I was about to sing. I had a solo part that I was gonna be singing. And there was tension between a family member who was very hypercritical of me, and I did not invite this person to come and watch me sing. And when I saw this person was in the crowd, I got nervous as I was singing and my voice cracked. And I remember he went like this. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, I just stopped singing. I stopped wanting to sing. I just stopped. And then I remember, you know, very recently we were in a ceremony and I was singing and I was just letting my heart just open up and then I remembered that moment and I literally felt my sacred essence energy come back to me. I remember that time when I was in middle school when I felt so ashamed, I felt so bad, that peace came back to me because I was starting to honor myself. I was happy and I was just singing from my heart, not because I'm a singer, but because I love to sing. Mm-hmm. So it's just one of those things. It's like when we start honoring ourselves, it's like it was so deeply buried within me that I didn't know to even go there. But because I'm constantly doing my work. I'm constantly, you know, making sure that I'm honoring and doing the things that I love to do. Pieces come back to us. And I'm there like just helping like navigate to make sure that the person is doing that. And then in journey, making sure that, oh, well, that still needs to be addressed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is that sometimes it might happen rather quickly. Other times it's going to be like a rehabilitation process. And then
yes.
Other times it might be more of a long-term maintenance, like managing your diabetes or something else, a continuing process.
Yeah.
So there's all parts along that spectrum.
Yeah. I mean, like the singing thing, I didn't even remember that part. I didn't even remember it. But it was very sad. Like I remember like just feeling so ashamed because my voice cracked and I just stopped wanting to sing. And I never really like reflected on it. I never like went back and like, what happened? But I remember like I was singing, I was just like happy. And I remembered that all of a sudden I literally felt an energy come back to me. It was me as a child when I was like, and like she came back and she was starting to sing through me. And it was just the most, and that people tell me that happens to them all the time. You know, when they're conscious and aware of that, you know, and it's not necessarily that people like, a lot of people do soul retrieval work and they don't necessarily call it that, but they feel it because all of a sudden they feel like, oh, I got something back. I feel my mojo.
One thing that I've noticed with a lot of people, because we, the three of us with my husband included, unfortunately this year it was canceled, but we tend sacred fire for 4 days at the end of June, usually at a fair just up the road from me and Sarenth. But we get all kinds of people coming to us for help and for offerings to the fire and prayers and cleansings. And it's usually a very wonderful weekend. But over the last, I think, 5 years I've been doing that with you guys, 5 years.
It all starts to blur to me. I hate to say
it. I know. But the one thing that I've noticed with a lot of people, especially just like talking to them, is the lack of awareness that people have to their world and their environment, you know, because we have our cell phones and we have social media that we're constantly consuming, and people don't get that click of whatever I watch and whatever I look at, whatever I read, that is all affecting me as an individual. It's all affecting my spirit, my emotions, my mentality, and all that stuff. And to snap somebody out of it, you say, just pay attention to this blade of grass. Give me your hand and I'm going to put this blade of grass in your hand and you're going to tell me everything you can about it. Find every little tiny detail. And you just start from there. And then one of the things I do is I get people to wiggle their toes. I'm like, just take your socks and shoes off and wiggle your toes. Take your big toe and just wiggle it up and down. Wiggle it fast, wiggle it slow. Really feel that, really get back into the body. And A friend of mine recently lost a loved one, and I have been through a terrible loss in that area. And I was talking to her the other day, and I said, take your shoes off. And she's like half crying, and she's like, what? I'm like, take your shoes off. She's like, okay, what do I do now? I'm like, clench your toes, squeeze them really hard, and then release them, and then squeeze them again and release them, and or tap your toes against the floor. I said, do this every day for a week. I said, you have to get back into your body because you're outside of it now. I said, all this pain and the sadness that you're experiencing is making you step outside of your body, outside of your world. So start with your toes. And I've been kind of walking her through this process. And so far she's like, I feel a little better today, and I feel a little better today the next day. Yep. And then the next day after that, I feel a little better. I'm like, cool, keep going. We're moving on to the Cavs next week, so get ready for that.
I have a very important question for our listeners right now. How many of you are clenching your toes? I'm betting about 50% of the people that hear this episode clench their toes at that
point. I hope so, because there's so much healing with getting back into your body, because I'm an avid yogi, and I enjoy doing the asanas and learning about the niyamas and yamas and all that stuff. And I'm currently reading a book by Chogyam Trungpa, which I know I mispronounced that horribly. But it's The Path of the Sacred Warrior. And I read it years ago, but it's such a wonderful book. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot all this stuff. It's so amazing. Sometimes it's good to just put the things down and look outside. See how many different things you can notice outside of your window. You can do some massive healing that way.
Right.
Absolutely.
Erica, so another question that I want to make sure that we cover, because I think it's an important one, is what are the biggest myths about soul retrieval?
I think one of the biggest myths is one that if someone facilitates for you, that it's done. That it's done. That's a big myth, you know, because there has to be an acknowledgement of what happened. Why did it happen? What are you doing that impeded that from happening? And are you letting it go truly? Are you ready to let it go? And it's okay if you're not. It's okay, because we have to be compassionate with ourselves in the process, because that's also really important too. Mm-hmm. You know, understanding the compassion, understanding, okay, this is the one step that I'm taking, but I'm going to keep doing this one step. You know, I'm not going to let it go. So that's, I think that's one of the biggest, honestly, I think that's one of the biggest myths is, and that has a lot to do with a lot of people, how people approach healing. You know, and I've seen it. It happened really at the turn of last century. It was just, you know, shifting the paradigm of like, no, I facilitate. I hold space for you. You know, I help you cleanse. I show you things, and I help you hold space to open up pathways. But ultimately, it's you. You know, I'm not. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think that's part of like how it was marketed as well? Because we've all seen the ads where.
Yes.
You know, $500 soul retrieval, wang bang, we're done. Look, I went in on Friday and I came out Friday night with all my soul. It's great.
Yeah. Well, and that's also why I wrote the book. I mean, that's a big part of me, because I didn't want to make like a big dent in someone's wallet, you know, because I come from a background of social justice and making sure that things are accessible to people. You know, I don't be like, hey, keep paying me and this and that. And when people ask me, how often do I need to come see you? I said, honey, that's up to you. That's up to you. When do you feel called? You know, keep doing your work. If you feel called, my door is open. You know, but it's, I'm going to read these tools, do your work.
So that's actually a very good segue to a question I wanted to ask you. Oh Lord, where did it go? So from what I'm reading, Curanderismo and it's a semi-close practice. One is from my reading, initiated into the work by another curandero, curandera, or is pushed to learn by the gods, ancestors, or spirits. Is this accurate? Because like one of the things that we encounter quite a bit is the cultural appropriation. And as I'm sitting here reading through this work, I'm like, okay, am I meant to actually use this stuff? Because I'm so not a initiated member of any of the societies. I'm not a some white dude from Michigan. So, it's a pretty big topic, especially in the communities that we all run in. And I just wanted to address that bugbear right out in front.
Yes. So in terms of the cultural appropriation, and I think it's a lot of people of color, a lot of us, and there's moments where I get upset a little bit, you know, when it's like, okay, can you at least acknowledge where you got this information? Can you at least acknowledge, like, wherever it is, you know, because if I'm recognizing, if I'm doing something that's Celtic, I'm going to recognize it as Celtic. If it's Native American, I'm going to recognize what Native American tribe it is. I'm going to do my work. And then if I don't know, I'm going to say, I don't know. But this is a really cool thing that I learned. And this is where I learned it and who I learned it from. You know, I acknowledge where it is. And I think that's very important in terms of, you know, because this is a two-sided topic. One in terms of, like, let me first address your first question in terms of, was that accurate? I don't know. I mean, would you consider getting thrown off a cliff like the deities were like, you're going to do this.
Yes.
Or we're going to throw you off the cliff again.
I'll get another goddamn mountain.
Yeah, that's right. I'll get another mountain. I love that. That's
And I always knew. It was something that I just knew. I always knew. I always knew, but I was like, no, that's not, I don't even know how I would do that. I don't know. Like, but it was something that was definitely in me. And I think it's up to us because there's a lot of people that come to me that have been my clients for a long time that they are definitely curanderas, but they're not working like how I'm working. They're nurses, they're graphic designers, they're production, you know, they're doing directing, they're doing different kinds of trades, but they're bringing in the tools that they have as curanderas into whatever it is that they do. And that's also something that we have to shift the way we view healing work, the way we view things, is not try to put everything in little boxes. Let's smash the box. Smash the box and become a dodecahedron. A shape-shifting dodecahedron.
I appreciate that a lot because, like I said earlier in the show, like I was finding a lot of my own practices going, hey, pay attention to this shit. Whether it was the fire cleansings or the soul retrieval work, the shape-shifting shamans that you point out in the book, I'm like, oh, yeah, that. Cousins, cool. There were points where I really had to sit back and go, wow, there's a lot of cross currents. And so because social justice and appropriation and all that is really on my mind a lot right now, you know, I had to kind of take, it's part of why I was really happy to talk with you about this, because I really had to take a step back and go, okay, I'm seeing a lot of echoes, but I really want to be careful about anything that I use.
Yeah.
Especially because, you know, I mean, I'm a polytheist and I'm seeing all these gods and goddesses that I don't know involved in these things. And I'm going, okay, so there's an entire galaxy of approaches, but there's also, you know, this undercurrent feeling as I'm reading the text going, okay, so God X is something that has to do with this. So like the guardians of the four directions have their own jobs. Just like we have in heathenry, we have four dwarves that hold up the sky.
Right.
And so there's a lot of cross currents that I'm feeling, but there's also like, there's distinct, really distinct differences. Like, and honoring those differences is just as important as finding the cross currents.
Yeah.
And so it's that interesting thing for me was navigating, okay, I can see these similarities, but it's really not the same. But man, there's a lot of echoing going on between these cultures.
Yeah, I think one, so there's, You know, when we identify, I think it's one of the things, it's really important that we identify where we got our sources. You know, who are we, that we give props, that we give props to the people that where it came from. Because when you're acknowledging, you're doing your due diligence, that you're not just taking, you know, you're not misappropriating something. And then there's honestly, like sometimes when I'm doing journeying work for someone, I've had Muhammad come to me, and I'm not from Islam. I've had Zarathustra, and I don't have anything to do with the Zoroastrian tradition. I have Yamaya, and I don't practice Santeria. And it's related, it's connected to the person that I'm working with. You know, I've had Hecate, and I'm not necessarily Wiccan. You know, I've had various different teachers that I have messages for these people that I, for people that I'm working with. And it's not necessarily for me, but it's through me, you know, it's like, hey, look, this is just like, cause people ask me like, well, how did that? I'm like, cause the people are like, how did you know? Like, I'm just like, I don't know. Like, it's just like game. I don't know.
I've had people who've come to me asking questions of different gods that have nothing to do with heathenry. Like, I had somebody come to me asking me questions about a Greek god. Like, can you do a rune reading? I'm like, yeah, ain't from the culture, but I can do it. We'll see how this works.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, I really feel you there, because I've had situations where somebody comes from a completely outside culture and wants information, and like, oh, you're on the spot, Johnny. Here you go.
So I've even had it to where I've had a god show up in my life and they're like, I'm just going to hang out here and I would like offerings, please, for a little while. And then a year, maybe more later, I will meet somebody and that god will reappear, tap me on the shoulder and be like, introduce me to them, please.
I've been
trying to talk to them for a while and you are my avenue to them. And I'm like, really?
Yep. Right, the shaman grams.
Mm-hmm. Ancestors are really good for that.
Usually use Saint Michael because I don't work with the Christian archangels at all, but it's like, oh, hi. But you know, like a month later somebody will say something and it's like, oh, this is all for you, here you go, Saint Michael, this is what you need to know, and that's it, and then it's done. So I feel that very much.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's. I mean, this thing that it's like in this work, we're not working within a box. You know, we're not working within a box. We're tapping into something that is not third dimensional. It's beyond that. It's something that's multidimensional. It's something that's expansive. And we acknowledge, like, you know, I'm doing the journey work, and this is what's coming forward, and this is what it is. You know?
Yep. Yeah. I know that really well. The sacred fires are really good for them. Like, I have no idea why this person's popping up to me, but there's this person with this description, and all of a sudden this person's bawling in front of the sacred fire because I've just described a grandfather or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah. If you
it's
would
not
allow
mine to keep,
to
but it's mine to give.
If you would allow me to do a slight segue, because this is actually one of the reasons why I approached you for this interview, because I don't know, several years ago I started to get messages, but this year it became just so urgent, and the spirit kept telling me that I need to do solar work. And I have spent all of this year trying to figure out what that means. And so I was Google searching, and guess whose next book pops up? Sacred Energies of the Sun and Moon, your next book coming out in July 14th, which is just a couple days away from my birthday. And I thought, okay, this has to be a sign. So tell me a little bit about this upcoming book so I can know what the heck I'm getting into here.
So essentially, this is common. You know, one of the things that I break down first and foremost is that there were many different understandings of different periods, right? But there was, at the same time, that you can see traces that were resilient throughout the time, throughout spaces, temporal, like, so what we call like Mesoamerica, right? And we see it in the mythologies, we see it in the artwork. So, you know, we see it in the Maya, we see it in the Mexica, we see it in the Mixtec, we see it in various different places, like, where it's believed that the dawn was believed for new beginnings. And the sacred ceremonies that were done for that express and getting energy from that, you know, I'll give you guys a pertinent example with that too, but you know, that it's believed that it was believed to get certain energy from that, that you were getting creation energy. And I explain, you know, what kind of ceremonies they did and how we use it. How we use it with simple mantras, how we do certain kinds of ceremonies. And I try to break it down for the busy person who doesn't have time, you know, to do a lot of like extensive like magic or magical rites or things like that. And then I also try to, I bring in things that for the person that does have time to do more, you know, elaborate things. And then I break it down for dawn. I break it down for morning. I basically explain that because there's different meanings, you know, the dawn and then the morning was different kinds of creation energies and divination work. And then the noon energies, that was very much connected to like power, you know, power and getting like the old, like, old, and it was just coming throughout, like different kinds of, and I went through different mythologies, different kinds of ceremonies that they did of what was understood, like a time where we were, the sun was believed to be given out the most tonali, sacred essence energy, and how we use that energy to revitalize ourselves at noon, you know, and what they used to do back then too. And then also the understanding of the afternoon, you know, when the sun is going down, where it was believed that the sun was becoming an older, you know, grandfather, and, you know, that there were the ladies who had died at childbirth, that they were actually carrying the sun into the west, and, you know, they were cleansing things, they were carrying away our woes, carrying away things that we no longer wanted. They were the warrior women that were coming in and doing this and allowing us to facilitate this. And, you know, I talk about this, like the understanding of grandmothers, and then the nighttime energies, transformation, you know, the times where it was like what was going on and how it was to be transformative and how we can use it. And, you know, it was interesting when I was in my wheelchair, I had, because I also talk about shamanic dream work too and how to tap into and do shamanic dream work, where we incubate our dreams and we're able to remember our dreams and how to tap in into those different realms while we're dreaming, because that was a big, big part of ancient Mesoamerican practice that is documented. And I cite from it too, where I was dreaming and I had a dream that I was in this flower realm, in the upper world flower realm. And I was talking to one of the sun deities, Tonatiuh, and basically explained to me that I had to go out, you know, and it was in my wheelchair. So I had to get my walker and I was like hopping along in one foot, like go out and put crystals along my energy centers and sit out there for 20 minutes to get sacred essence energy. And during that process, it helped me manage my pain. It helped me actually manage and facilitate my healing. And it was something that it came through me through dream work, you know. And then, and later on when I studied it in grad school, because the time that I was guided to do it was at the time where Tonali was at its highest, where that sacred essence energy was as highest. I didn't know what I was doing. I just intuitively was guided to do it. And then when I read that, I read those, you know, those books, I was like, what? You know, and then it was cool because then it allowed me to start asking my teachers more questions like, oh, what does this mean? And how is this? And, you know, it was, so it was a beautiful combination of that. And I just said, you know, this information, it needs to be shared. It needs to stay alive with us, you know, so we can understand how we can move in rhythm with the sun and the moon and use these sacred energies in very practical ways. And also use our dream, because we spend 26 years, normal average person spends 26 of years of their lives dreaming, and they never remember it. They don't tap into it. So how to tap in into those realms, you know, to that dream work, to that unconscious mind. So I provide those tools as well, you know, during nighttime. So yeah, that's a little snippet about it.
Awesome.
Fun stuff.
Yeah, it actually speaks a lot, I think, to what Caitlin was talking about a few minutes ago, about paying more attention sometimes to the world around us and getting more in tune with those things.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Returning to the natural rhythm of the world around you. I spent 4 years working my body to death in a greenhouse, and I came to a very deep understanding of how plants work, and how resilient and wonderful and amazing they are from working in a commercial greenhouse. We had 40
47 greenhouses, maybe. And they were just, they were awesome. And that kind of opened the door to understanding different rhythms of the world and how I can integrate myself into their realm and how to balance and shift my energy back and forth.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That's definitely a way to do it. Definitely. That's beautiful.
I'm super excited for your book now, by the way.
Yay!
Available for pre-order on Amazon right now. I have to be a good host and say these things. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, also, I'm very much looking forward to it.
Inner Traditions, my publisher has it too.
Yeah. I was going to say, can I have somebody else than the Amazon conglomerate? Monster. I try to avoid them as much as possible, but sometimes it doesn't work.
That's the note I will put in the show links then. How about that?
All right.
All right. Fantastic. No, I'm really excited about that. That's going to be great. That's just essentially what I was looking for. And like I said, I felt like there was a connection there and I'm like, oh, I need that book. And then I was like, no, I need to talk to that author. That's what I need to do. So I'm so happy that we had a chance to do this. Oh, this is great.
Yes, thank you for having me. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Did you have another question, Sarah? You were,
I've got like entire pages of questions. it was just really cool how I was going through the idea of breath and spoken words as offerings to be a powerful thing. This is something that for anybody that's gotten a rune reading from me, I have everybody do, myself included, before the rune reading actually starts. And I'm finding so many parallels. Like a lot of my notes are, wow, this is a parallel here. The house feeding ceremonies that you described in the Fire Olympia chapter in the Olympia book, I was like, oh, we have that. We call those husvitir. And we feed our house spirits. Like our land, our homes are alive. Like you talk about this in chapter 8. And something that I found in both books that was really cool was you talk in both books, the Axis Mundi is a fixed central place in an unfixed metaphorical space that served as a portal to other worlds. It could be the heart of a place, sacred objects, or a person. What you said was that the understandings of the center were not mutually exclusive, but could and often did converge. I really identified with this because Yggdrasil, the world tree for us, is like it's our Axis Mundi. It's the center of the universe, but it's also where everything's interconnected. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, oh, there's so much connection. So you're like talking about the four directions, but you're also talking about up, middle, and low. I'm right there with you. Because Mythgarth, Middle Earth, is pretty much precisely between all these different worlds, and yet we have points of contact in between all these things, and it's kind of like Earth is the big meeting ground in between all these worlds while we're still all part of the same tree. And I really found that cool, like I was reading how probably going to butcher it. Is it Mexica or Mexica?
Mexica.
Mexica, thank you. Mm-hmm. The multi-part soul, Tonali, Teolia, mm-hmm. and Ihiotl, like, mm-hmm. all have cognates in the heathen soul matrix. And I was like, my God, okay. So, like, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm nodding as I'm reading this book, and just how the Zina, Zina Contecos, I believe a 13-part chulo.
Uh-huh.
And it was just like, oh, we have so much in common. And just for me, it was just like this constant reinforcement of, you see, like my spirits are sitting over my shoulder going, okay, you see this, right? Like, you're not just full of shit. Like, you get this, right? The ways that tonality can be built and lost are similar to heathen perspectives on it, including sorcery, for instance. Like, I, so I guess maybe it's not so much like questions I had, but it was just like all these different parts where I was like, boom, boom, boom. There's so many similarities. And it was just so, it was satisfying that we shared so much. And it was really cool that I could go, oh, I get that practice from this perspective. And there's still tons of space for both of us to have our own understanding and expression and all this powerful stuff. And you made it so accessible in the book. Like, I gotta give huge props to that, because your bibliography is friggin' huge.
It is. It's amazing.
Like, wow. And so, like, just reading this, you know, I could see, you know, reflections of my work, but also I could see reflections of Jim's son work that you've been engaging in. Like, a great gathering of tonali. And the animal coescences thing that you mentioned earlier. Like, we have Othr and Hammer, which are two different sides of it. Othr being, like, the powerful mindset and then the ultra states of consciousness, and the Hammer being that bilocation and your spirit goes out of your body. Like, oh, wow, this is, you know, it's these powerful methods of wisdom and connection that you've brought together in these two books and your forthcoming two books. I don't know how you do it, because that's just freaking amazing, especially this close together. And I just want to, like, give huge props to you, because, like, you've made the material so accessible and yet so grounded in the worldview of where you are coming from. And you keep reiterating this, and I love this. I'm going to point this out, that you keep telling me about how this is not set in stone. It's set in paper, and paper can be written over, and it can be notated. It can be. I come from this dual world of academia and spirit work, and your book reflects just so much of my own perspective on things. I was ecstatic that you're coming in for this interview. Cause I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so accessible. And I never would have picked, if it hadn't been for you, I would not have picked up a book on Curran Durismo, because I was afraid of cultural appropriation, and I wouldn't have made all these cross current connections between my own practices, because I looked at Curran Durismo work as closed to me, completely closed. And these books have really shattered my perspective on that.
I also like that you have provided enough information for somebody who isn't overly practiced or as experienced as the three of us are to understand and facilitate their own limpias and pláticas and stuff like that for themselves, but you also encourage people to explore a little bit with it, not like taking it totally out of context, but, you know, like, use whatever feels right to you. This is what I use and this is what I suggest, but once you get more comfortable with it, you know, bring in other colors or bring in other flowers, you know, stuff like that. And I really appreciate that, because so many spiritual books that I've read, if you want to do this specific spell, you have to have exactly these things in order to complete it. And I'm like, not everybody's capable of accessing that. So it's very practical and it's very well written, and you have a wonderful writing voice, and I'm just fangirling over here. You're wonderful.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we won't take up your entire evening. I feel like we've taken a lot of your time already. People can find out more about you at your website, which is realizeyourbliss.com. Actually, I should ask a quick question. How is the current situation with the world, with COVID and everything else, affecting your treatment of people? Is there any considerations there that people should know about? Or
if people are worried, they can see me online.
Okay. No, that's a great answer. That's perfectly fine. And we will go to Inner Traditions to seek out your books. That's a fantastic source. Any last second tips for people who might not have had the benefit of having mentors or teachers like you did, and they're just starting to get involved? Obviously, your books are a great resource, but any sort of tip that you might like to offer?
Work from your intuition first, and then do the research.
Oh, nice.
reversal of what a lot of people say.
Yes.
People spend a lot of time digging into the research first.
I like it.
I like it. Yeah. I like it very much. Well, thank you again so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. You've made it a very special 50th show for us. And thank you for being patient with me as I pronounce things like Napoleon Dynamite saying quesadilla. And I appreciate your patience and your wisdom. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. Thank you. Have a beautiful evening, everybody.
You too.
You as well.
And thank you to all our listeners. Thank you for listening. And we will talk to you next time around the fire.
Okay.
And that's it. That's a wrap.
Yay, we're done.
Yay.
Thank you so much, guys. Have a beautiful.
It was wonderful. And feel free to contact me again when that next book starts to get ready to come out. We'd love to have you on.
Yes, please.
Yes, definitely. Yes.
Definitely been a joy talking to you, and it's so weird how similar our two paths are. I mean, for Jim and I, we don't have as heavy of an herb teaching as you do, because ours is a mountain tradition. So you know, not a whole lot grows up there outside of potatoes and llamas, but
well, you plant them right in the earth and they kind of go meh.
Yeah, you know, close. But hearing you, when you were talking about the directions, you started in the south, which is where our tradition starts too, and it works southwest, northeast. And when you were talking about that, I was like, that's almost identical to how our directions are set up, even with like the shadow is in the west, our ancestors are in the north. I was just like, I got goosebumps, and I was like, it's so weird. It's so cool.
It is awesome.
Yeah, that was really cool from my perspective too, because the north lies death. Like the land of the dead lies in the north for our sacred directions. So yeah, that was so many similarities. Oh my gosh. Ah.
Thank you guys so much. Well,
thank you again. You have a great night now, and I'll drop you an email as soon as the episode hits the public.
Please. Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye now. All right, folks, I'm going to go ahead and she already jumped out. So I just think I had the sense that she was.
Yep. Yeah, she was wrapping up.
So, yep. So I didn't want to keep her too much longer, but that was really good.
Yeah. I hope I didn't take up too much time. Like,
I don't think so.
Okay. No, I think we were all pretty balanced.
Yeah.
Okay.
I might have talked a lot at one point, but it happens.
Well, I don't worry so much about you folks. I worry about me, because I can talk at length.
Well, see, we all worry about ourselves, so we're all right.
Yeah, as long as we're keeping ourselves in check, we're good.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I talk sometimes too much, too, but I'm always trying to kind of move the conversation from one segment to the next sort of thing. So I figured that's where I come in, but that's why I talk more. So
I appreciate you.
But nobody's ever yelled at me about it, so I guess we're doing all right.
No, I'm just really conscious that if I'm allowed to talk at length, I will. So I just wanted to make sure that nobody else will crowd out. Okay.
I felt like there was a lot of connection between I knew there was going to be a lot of connection between the way she bridges the academic work and the spirit work. And that's something that you're very involved in. So I knew that you guys were going to have a lot to talk
about. I'm sitting here reading this fucking thing going, holy shit, it all makes sense. Like, oh my God. It's like some of my ancestors were popping up going, hey, do you fucking see this?
I was blown the fuck away with the first two chapters of the book that I read. And I was just like, oh my God, the amount of work that you have put into your own path is so phenomenal. You are a genuine practitioner, and I'm so glad that we're going to interview you. Like, I'm just, yes.
I connected so much.
Here's the part that I find interesting, Sarah, is that by you reading her book and her books and us reading it, Caitlin and I realized the similarities, and now you have too. And so it's funny, in a roundabout way, it's another way of emphasizing what we've talked about before, about how our paths are not that different in a lot of ways. But I don't think that maybe we always have an appreciation for it as much as we do, unless someone else is kind of there to kind of stand that middle ground and go, yep, those two are similar. That makes sense.
Like, for real, like, you know, the north in our system is death, east is Jotunheim, south is Muspelheim, west is, oh God, what was it? Come on, brain. But yeah, like, so much of what she was saying lines up just so well.
Yep.
Just wow.
There's no right.